This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Welcome all to K-Drama School. I'm your host, Grace Jung, and class is now in session. On the road for the last 5 days, and I am still kind of recovering from it all. I was out camping in Copper Falls, Wisconsin, which is northern Wisconsin. It is close to rivers and lakes. I mean, most of Wisconsin has rivers and lakes everywhere you go, but like northern Wisconsin, there are more like waterfalls. There are definitely areas that you can go hiking in. They are very beautiful. It is very close to the Upper Peninsula, which is right where Wisconsin and Michigan kind of border. So I went there and just camped out for a couple of nights. And then I spent a night at a motel and then another night at a hotel. Of those 4 nights, my favorite night was probably at the hotel. Yeah, I am definitely a hotel kind of person. I think even like doing stand-up, I prefer being at a hotel. Like camping is fun. I don't mind camping, but it is a lot of work, you know? And it's like, why do I have to go through all of this and like eat processed foods and beef jerky and string cheese and trail mix when like I pay rent and I can go grocery shopping and make a smoothie or a green juice? Like, why do I have to pay money to go on a site to experience life as if I don't have a home, you know? And it's just weird to me. But you know what? Like I don't mind it. I do really enjoy the outdoors. I do enjoy nature. I have an appreciation for it. Like whenever there was water nearby and I could go swimming in it, like in Michigan, for instance, like found a place called Imp Lake, I-M-P Lake. And it was so beautiful. Like the lake was so clean. The water was cold, crystal clear. I can see my feet. Like that's the kind of lake I want to swim in. I don't want to swim in a lake covered with algae, stinking to high heaven. Because those are the lakes here in Madison right now. Like today it was 93 degrees. The lake was covered in green slime because it's so warm outside. And it's like, who wants to be there? You know, like the spring here is very brief. And it's tricky because in the spring, like you just have rain, you know, rain randomly comes. And so it could be tricky, but yeah, Copper Falls, like sitting by the waterfall, taking it in, you know, sitting by the lake and dipping my feet in the water, like going for a swim in the lake where it's crystal clear, seeing fish, like that was cool. You know, Copper Falls, it is a healthy like water system there. And you could tell it's a healthy water system there because there are like frogs living in it. There are leeches. Apparently all of those things are like signs of a healthy water system. But I don't want to swim with frogs and leeches. No, I don't care. Like, no thanks. Yeah. So Copper Falls, like, I'm over it. You know, I did it. It's fine. But Imp Lake, Michigan, oh, what a gem. The water there was like so epically gorgeous. And yeah, I had a really, really lovely time on that lake. It was brief, but, and I got sunburnt, but I don't care. Like, it was probably the highlight of my trip. Got to go swimming a little bit in pools, like hotel pools, motel pools. Like, that was fun. This is something I just realized, like, I didn't know this was a thing, but sometimes, like, families will literally go to a hotel just so that the kids can play in the pool. Did you know this? Did you know you could do this? I didn't know you could do this. I thought you had to book a night at a hotel in order to enjoy their amenities. But no, it turns out you could pay like a small fee and go swimming in a local pool if you so choose to. So, hell yeah. Wish I'd known that sooner. Today, I'm going to be discussing the show When the Stars Gossip. And it is a show that was airing on TVN early this year, between January and February. That was the run. Kong Hyo-jin is in it. Yeah, my favorite beloved Wonder Woman, Kong Hyo-jin. And Yi Min-ho is in it, who is... He's not my personal favorite. I'm very indifferent to him. Like, I'm just like very like whatever. But I know a lot of people love this guy. They think he's sexy. They think he's charming. They think he's a good actor. I'm just like, he's so whatever to me. I don't get it. But that doesn't mean that he's not a good actor. I think he's a good performer. You know, he's at this point, he's like basically a veteran actor. You know, he's done a lot of K-dramas, a lot of rom-coms. He's also done that Apple TV show, right? The one about Pachinko, yeah. The show is written by Seo Suk-hyang and directed by Park Shin-woo. And these two writer-director duos, they collaborate quite often. But what's interesting about this show, as I was watching it, I just knew that the show, based on like the cameo appearances of some of the actors that I had seen, like Cho Jung-suk, for instance, yeah, and Park Jin-joo. Like, both of them were in that show, Jealousy Incarnate, which also stars Kong Hyo-jin. And I was like, I have a feeling that the writer or director is basically the same people that worked on Jealousy Incarnate, because otherwise you wouldn't have these cameo appearances. And so I have discussed this before on my podcast, but I'll just say it again. It's like the way that cameo appearances turn up on these shows is just a sign or an indication. It's almost like a fingerprint of the creators based on like these actors that you've seen in like these other shows. It's like, oh, this trio, they were in Jealousy Incarnate, so of course you would have the cameo for this show with Cho Jung-suk and Park Jin-joo, right? And that show, Jealousy Incarnate, I know it made Park Jin-joo like super famous. You know, she was like already like, she already had kind of a like, whatchamacallit, she was kind of in the scene, like, you know, doing small time bits here and there. But like that show, like, she really took it to another level. She was like absolutely hilarious and killed it. So good for Park Jin-joo. This show is really weird. I like it because it's so bizarre and out there. And I feel like this writer, what's her face again? Seo Suk-hyang. I feel like she is good at really original storytelling. Cause she did some other shows too. Like I can't name them off the top of my head right now. She did the one about like walk in love or whatever. Yeah, that was like a weird one. I don't think I ever covered that one. I probably won't, because the show is like not all that great, but it was an original and a unique kind of narrative. And this show, When the Stars Gossip, this is very, very unique, very original, because this is a sci-fi K-drama, you know. And I feel like sci-fi, I mean, we have quite a few like mystical, weirdo, sci-fi-esque K-dramas out there, but like this one is like particularly sci-fi. Like, they have this like interstellar esque music score that's happening in the back, you know, which we've seen in Silent Sea, obviously. It's like all these, you know, shows that have like outer space, intergalactic stuff, they're always going to harken back to interstellar stuff. Just like people had done the same with like Space Odyssey 2000, you know, or Star Wars. It's like after you see something like that, you just kind of keep trying to strive for that, right? And so I did notice that, but the narrative is like so unique. It's about a guy who is a gynecologist. Already unique. We're already off to a weird start. Like, how you're a gynecologist? He has three mothers. Yeah. Are they lesbians? They're not. They were working women who worked at bars, who worked at these kinds of like sort of sketchy, skeevy sort of spaces where, you know, they're not selling their bodies per se, but it's also not like the moment you have somebody there like that, it's like, okay, like they probably are, right? So it's like, all right, are they a sex worker? Are they not? It's very ambiguous. But she had three women raise him because he was an orphan. And these three women, they live together. They all cohabitate. They all raise this son together. It's like they're basically a queer family, right? Again, this is something that we see in K-dramas time and time again, like queer kinship or, you know, not hetero non-normative relationships or chosen family kinds of situations. So this is another example of that. You have themes like fertility, themes like adoption, themes like US and Korea space journey, that kind of thing, like collaboration together in order to go up into space, that kind of shit. Like, wow, very interesting. You have English speaking actors on this show. Yeah. Like, I don't know who they are. I haven't seen them in other stuff. I'm not familiar with them in the Hollywood context, but they were good actors too. Like, they didn't suck ass like they normally do when we see them in a K-drama, right? Like, I remember saying this to somebody, but I was like, a lot of these English speaking actors on these K-dramas, they speak English as if it's the first time they have ever spoken English. It's so awkward. But in this one, no, they were smooth. They gelled well. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. Cohesion. Do they gel well? And it worked. Not only do we have this gynecologist situation, but he's also like sleeping with and engaged with a woman he doesn't love. I mean, that's like pretty radical to have like a sex scene where the male counterpart is just like, I don't really know if I'm into her, but I'm just going to bone her anyway. And I guess I'll marry her because she's rich.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this... it's the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Like, whoa, what a scumbag. But he's the protagonist. Like, oh, that's a little novel. And then you have this woman, Eve Kim, played by our beloved Kong Hyo-jin, who is an adoptee. She was an adoptee raised in the U.S. and she is an astronaut. Like, whoa. Yeah. And not only is she an astronaut, but she's a commander of the ship. And her whole goal is like, can fertility occur in outer space? So she's working with like fruit flies and mice. Like, that's her whole thing. Not only that, but like there's a sex scene on this show and it is pretty erotic. They have space sex and then she gets pregnant. Like, bro, like we're going for it. Like, they were going for it. They did not hold back. So we got that going on. And then, of course, it's like, this is where things get weird, right? Like, we see a pattern of this. And it's like, is she going to live or is she going to die? And so this whole, like, fallen woman concept, right? Like, the whole fallen woman idea, this has been established in, like, Hollywood cinema. But it's like, whenever a woman who is single, unwed, and she's independent, like, she always gets punished in the end. Either she dies or she is destitute or loses a lover or something. Like, she is punished in some way. And this show, I don't know if they punish her. I mean, can we read it as a punishment? But anyway, spoiler alert, like, she doesn't live. It was really epically shocking. I didn't finish this drama for a few months. Like, I had to wait because when I first started watching it, I was like, this is a little too out there for me. It's a little too bizarre. I need some time to, like, let it marinate. So I watched it in, like, a span of 4 months. And I'm like, I know I've covered this before. Like, there were so many K-dramas that would just kill off women, like the female protagonist. Like, they would kill her off in so many shows, like in the 90s and early 2000s especially. And I was like, why did they have to kill her? I don't get it. And I'm like, looking back at all the times that I have seen a strong, independent woman, or not even strong, she's just independent. And it's always the same thing over and over. Like, she's an orphan, she has no parents, so she does everything she can to survive. She finds a guy and then gets pregnant, and then she dies. Yeah, and she gives birth to the baby, and the guy has to raise the baby, but she dies. Like, this has happened in so many shows. We saw it in Till the End of the World. Like, we see it in that one. That's the one with Yushiwon. We see it in, there's this one show, it's called like Yamang or something, like Ambition or whatever. I forget the names of the actors, but like, this was like late 90s, same deal. There was a woman, orphan, she did everything she could to survive, and then she got pregnant with her ex-boyfriend and then died of leukemia. In this case, the woman becomes pregnant. And it's like, it's either her or the fetus. And she decides, no, I'm gonna keep this baby. Everybody's like, no, get rid of the baby. Like, fucking, it's your life. Like, get rid of this baby. You can always have another baby. And she's just like, no, I'm gonna keep this baby. Against all odds, I'm going to spend 9 months up in space and have this baby up in space. And she does. And then dies. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why did you put me through all of this shit? I was really shocked, and it affected me. I was like, for at least 24 hours, I was really blue. So my point is, I don't think South Korea is there yet. Like, when it comes to a woman's pleasure or an independent woman who wants to, like, have a baby out of wedlock and keep her life, like, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It could be both. We could do both. Like, she doesn't have to be married. But, like, the show, it kept implying, like, you know, towards the end, I remember even, like, Yi Min-ho's character, he kept saying, like, my wife. He kept addressing her as my wife. They weren't married. They were barely a couple. Like, they had just met. And then they hooked up, like, a week in or week or two in. They ended up, like, screwing up there when he was still technically engaged to another woman back on Earth. Like, goodness. You know, I guess like what happens up in space stays in space. But no, man, she got knocked up. Wild. You know what else is wild? It's like she was pregnant. And then while going up to space, like the fetus survived. So what makes you think that the fetus can't make it when you come back down? Like, I don't. So many contradictions. In any case, very entertaining because, again, very original narrative. Like, I want it to be zany. I want it to be weird. And this show delivers on all, just, it hits all the marks. And then it just does a weird U-turn. Like, I was like, I was not expecting that. I didn't expect for her to die. Fuck. And yeah, they kill her off. I'm clearly still, like, bothered by it. I don't think she should have died. Folks, today the guest we have is my buddy Oscar Fuentes, who is a really brilliant clown. He's a very talented performance artist clown based in Los Angeles. He and I met when we were working out clown stuff back in LA. Whenever we went to Play Space on Wednesdays at the Elysian Theater, I would see him. Whenever I took a clown class, I would see him. And I just remember like seeing him work and always like admiring how good he was. I was like, man, that's this guy. He has it. Like, he has what it takes. I always remember admiring his work. I admired like his presence on stage. Like, just the way he is just like so lovable and likable, you know? And I think it has to go back to like this round theory. Like, there's a roundness about him. And he's just so sweet, like a genuinely sweet, good soul, like true artist, that kind of vibe. So I feel very privileged and happy to have Oscar as our guest. And folks, if you're listening to this, you already know that I am the author of a book called K-Drama School, a pop culture inquiry into why we love Korean television. And it is available wherever you get your books, your local bookstore, Amazon, Walmart, Target, anywhere and everywhere, all right? But if you can, I strongly and highly recommend, in these troublesome economic times, you can go to your local bookstore and support local business. If they don't have my book, you can ask them to order it, and they will order it for you. Dog, yeah, this is a thing. So support your local bookstores. And if you can't, you can always borrow this book from your local library. All right. You could get it as an audiobook. You get it as an ebook. You could get it as a hard copy. If the library doesn't have it, it is your taxpaying right to get the book that you need. You just ask a librarian. It's like, this is a book I'm looking for. Can you please order it for me? And they will. Dog. They will. If you don't have a library card, what's the holdup? Get one, man. You know, I have a library card and I could access Canopy and watch so many good movies. That's an upside, you know? Sometimes when I'm on the road and I'm like, I wish I could listen to an audiobook. I just go right on Libby. Boom! I could just rent an audiobook instantly. It's beautiful. So get a library card and reach out to your local librarians if they don't have my book. And order it, man, because you can get it for free. So without further ado, let's talk to my good friend and very talented clown, Oscar Fuentes. Amazing. Dude, thanks for joining me. It's been a minute. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
You know, same old, doing crazy shit.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been good. How about you?
I've been good. I thought, I think the last time, one of the last times we spoke, you told me you were trying to have a baby. Did you guys make a baby yet, or what's going on?
Well, you know what? We did, because, yeah, we were pregnant. We got pregnant in, like, October.
Uh-huh.
Or when was it? September? Maybe September. And then we lost our baby in, like, the end of November, which was crazy.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and it's been crazy. And we've been trying since then.
Okay.
And it's surprisingly hard to get pregnant.
It is. It's not easy. I mean, I think it's getting harder and harder as time goes by, unless you're like a teenager, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We're not teenagers. But yeah,
No, go ahead.
No, I think, yeah, that was one of the last times I remember talking to you. It's been a while. And then you went on the road, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I left LA last year in May and then went back to New York for a couple months and then moved to Madison, Wisconsin. And I'm still here.
Yep. Damn, May. Almost a year. More than a year then.
Over a year ago. Yeah, yeah. I was just like kind of over it. I was kind of over the whole thing. I mean, like, I enjoyed clowning and all of that. But beyond that, I was just like, yeah, I don't really feel at home here. And I've been here like 10 years and I still don't feel at home here. So what am I doing here? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Like, how long have you been in LA for?
Well, I grew up in LA, so I've been here all my life.
That's home to you. There you go.
It's home. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to, I realize that if I were to go to move anywhere, it would have to be a big city.
Mm-hmm.
And like the arts, you know, there has to be lots of art stuff to do. I think I would go crazy. And I'm like, I feel like I'm really spoiled and just like almost entitled.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real, game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Because I'm like, you know, as you know, I go to all the clown shows. I go to all the fucking shows.
Yeah.
But I'm still like, man, this is not enough. Where's all the weirder shit? Where are the people doing, you know, the more thought-provoking art? This is too pedestrian. And I'm sort of struggling a little bit with that right now with the clown community. Because, you know, especially in LA, it's like, I feel like it's very comedy forward. It's very, you know, and it's like we have a lot of improvisers, we have a lot of sketch people, we have a lot of actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more and more leaning into like, you know, the performance art aspect of it, which I feel like that's what drew me into clown. You know, because I think clown is such a high art.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
But there's not enough of it.
What about, like, you know, have you considered traveling to, like, Paris or something and taking that course with, like, Gaulier and, like, doing that whole thing? Because that's definitely, like, a thing that some LA clowns have done.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I do feel like we have a really great teachers in LA. Mm-hmm. Really great clown teachers. I think it would be good, but I think I would be disappointed, like a lot of people are. I think I'd be like, man, this was a waste of money. But you know, I think ultimately it's like, I have to do it. I have to do what I want to see. I have to put that out and then hopefully other people follow.
Who are some of your favorite, like, clown teachers in Los Angeles?
You know, I love Jet. Jet Eveleth is amazing. She was, like, the first one that I really studied with. Like, she had these sort of open classes, I think weekly, at the Lyric. And it was just, you know, you walk around for a couple hours, just like staring at each other, just like intense staring and just being present with each other and just like staring into each other's eyes. And I was like, yeah, this is what I want. This is what I want to do. It's
crazy. What does
that
do for you?
You know, I think it's made me like, so it definitely, it's made me more confident. But I think it's like so human. It makes me want to cry. It makes me want to cry. It makes me want to, like, it makes me want to, like, you know what it does? It makes me want to believe in the supernatural. Like, it makes me want to believe in the spiritual world, because I don't believe in a lot of that. I'm very nihilistic and just concrete. And it's so powerful that it makes me want to believe.
Yeah.
In this weird energy.
Yeah.
That I don't believe in, but it's so powerful that it does.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It makes you feel this power of human vulnerability, kind of like in a very intense way. Is that what you mean? Like,
yeah. You know, I think, because we're just like, you know, constantly, you know, it's like, so you're constantly in a community of artists, like you'd think, oh yeah, we're really going to gel. We're really going to experience things, but it's very superficial so much of the time. There's no time to feel.
Yeah.
You know, and having to feel that, you know, when are you going to, you know, unless you have a partner or your family, you're not feeling your feelings. And then even with yourself, so much of the time we like, I don't want to feel. But this, because it's an art form and it's like, I want to get good as fuck. I'm like, I have to look at you. I have to do it. And I really want to be the best. So it makes me feel those feelings. And it's fucking addictive. It's addictive. But yeah, it's so human. It's so human and raw.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So with Jet, so you have that experience. Who are some of your other favorite clown teachers and like some of the things that you learned that kind of blew your mind or?
I love Dean Evans. Dean Evans is great. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all about, you know, I have a lot of insecurity with the things I want to make. And Dean is always like, push even more. And then like, if you're going to be fucked up, don't be just a little fucked up. Go all the way. And then, you know, then either apologize for it or deal with that mistake that you've made. But always push more. Like, it can always be more. You can always be more present. You can always be more fucked up. And I love a teacher that tells you that isn't, you know, that doesn't censor, that doesn't have that censorship in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not saying that it's right or wrong, but it's like, you got to try it and see if it's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love Dean for that. That's a good discovery. And it just like fuels me as an artist, because I get very insecure. But I know there's artists, there's teachers out there who are on my side, who are better, you know, the artists that I love, I think are on my side, are the same thought process.
Yeah. What is it that makes you feel insecure about your work?
You know, I think it's because I know there, you know, there's different point of views there, and they're all existent in, you know, if I'm going to go on stage and like, oh, I'm going to masturbate with like mayo or something. I know there's going to be a percentage that is going to like it. I know there's going to be a percentage that's going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's going to be a percentage that's like, this is not art.
Mm.
And I think I focus on, you know, those percentages instead of, you know, the majority will probably like it or tolerate it. I think just tolerating it makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But that small percentage, it bleeds into me, and then I'm like, I take on that role of this is not good. This is bad. This is not art. Even though, you know, I'll hype myself up and be like, this idea is so good. And then like the next day it's like, man, what was I thinking? What was I thinking?
Yeah. So it's the fear of rejection then, somebody who might not be down with what you put out.
You know, the fear. Yeah, I would say yes. I think rejection is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't want to make anybody like upset. So, you know, like just yesterday we had this bit, me and a few friends, we were doing a bit, you know, we were sort of dealing with like rape. Mm. And, you know, my friend came out in a Donald Trump suit character. Mm-hmm. Somebody else was the Statue of Liberty. And then I came out as like an immigrant victim and they were going to rape me. You know, and so the thing we my friend was actually going to put a dildo in my butt, so we were also going to play with penetration.
Okay, wow.
So they turned off the lights on us. They were like, no, and I was showing full asshole to the audience, like just, you know, like I wasn't sideways. It was full on asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, beforehand, we were like, commit no matter what, if they hate it. But I wasn't prepared for, hey, you can't do this. You can't do this. We're getting blacked out. And it felt really weird. And I felt like, oh, no, I did something wrong.
Yeah.
And then I questioned my art. I am like, was it good art?
Right.
So yeah, the rejection and then that feeling, because I feel like I follow the rules. I want to follow the rules. But
And then it's like in clowning, what exactly are the rules? Like it's so nebulous and it depends, right? And
yeah.
And also there are no rules. But then there are. But then what are they? But then you won't know what they are until rejection happens. It's very, very difficult to navigate that, I feel like.
Yeah, big time. And another teacher, you know, Chad, is, clown anarchist, clowns, new clowns, you know, or there shouldn't be any rules. And what is clown is undefined.
Yeah.
But, you know, clown, the rules are in the room. And unfortunately, but, you know, there's other art forms. There's other things, you know. Yeah. Are we just going to do clown? Are we, what else? You know, so if there's no rules, then why does it just have to be clown? Why not? Oh, performance art, Buffon. Sketch, comedy, stand-up, like we could all be those roles at the same time and be like, hey, fuck you, I know you don't like this, but we're gonna keep pushing. But and make our own roles.
I feel like that's a good point, because when it comes to a lot of these, the resistance from the crowd, the resistance from the audience, right? Or the rejection from the crowd or audience. It's like when they are doing the rejection and when they are doing the resisting, it says more about them than the artist. And so the way I read it, it's like, or this is at least an ideal I'm trying to strive towards. I don't believe that there is such a thing as a rejection. Or I just don't believe that rejection is actually valid or real. Because depending on the culture, depending on the individual, depending on the moment, depending on the space, even the temperature of the room or the lighting of the room, so many variables can tip the scale to rejection versus tolerance versus acceptance. Like, it's so like hard to find that. And when a person's like, oh, like I hate that, I would never do that, and it's like, but why not? Like, the artist is doing it. It's not outside the bounds of human expression. Clearly it's happening right here. So why is it that this individual is able to be this way and express themselves in this way and thrive in this way? And then you, on the other hand, look at that and you're just like in complete, you're appalled or shocked or hated or rejected. What's going on with you internally that is causing that? Like, the reason why I moved to Wisconsin was to teach at UW-Madison. And I noticed that with a lot of my students, like, this would happen. They would see a movie and then we would come in to talk about it, and like half the room would be like in outrage. They'd be like, I hated this movie. I don't know what's going on with someone. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, all valid, all true. But what is going on with you that is making you reject them? Is there something that happened to you in your past that is making you feel a certain way about this? Because half the other room that's quiet, they didn't care. Yeah. On my end, I also didn't find this that bothersome. I was like, this is perfectly okay to show. So it's like the resistance and the acceptance and the tolerance, like the reaction from the audience really says more about that individual than anything else, or what's going on socially or culturally or politically, I think, rather than is this acceptable art? Because to me, like, any art is just art. Like, art doesn't ask to be judged. Art is just there. It exists, yes. And it's there, and it's now a part of our reality, our part of our universe, a part of our world, part of our human being. And then the reaction is showing, like, oh, what's going on with you that is making you react so strongly to this? And in that regard, it's like the art was actually a necessity, because it's showing the barometer of this person and what they are able to withstand and not withstand.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's, as a performer, you know, I asked a lot of people recently, because I was doing a solo show for the first time.
Yeah. Tell me about the show. Describe it a little bit.
It was...
or your character.
It's called Pain is Man, and I'm a penis man. But, you know, I'm a human being. I'm just a regular person, but I'm a penis man.
Yeah.
You know, and I wear like a cone head that's supposed to look like a penis.
Yeah.
It's very ritualistic, but, you know, I have like a lot of dances, and they're supposed to be like, you know, like mating dances and sort of very ceremonial. You know, I sort of deal with like this person has lost, and there's a lot of grief and a lot of shame. I was like, what is your suggestion? What are your tips for doing an hour? And like, you know, there were a lot of people were like, hey, you know, don't interpret the silence or the bombing as you're not funny or that your art is bad. And so I fucking committed so hard. And I think that's why it was so good, because I was like, just commit. It's this on stage, and whatever they feel is what they're feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, care, I need to be better about taking care of myself as a performer, as an artist, and separating those two worlds, because I'm not responsible for your feelings. Oscar isn't. And so I shouldn't feel bad. I should be able to, you know, I should 100% be confident in being like, hey, this is my art. This is what I was doing. Instead of bending, because we're not in charge of people's reactions. And it's so easy to be like, hey, I do, you know, you I'm sure, you know, as a performer, to get down on yourself.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes what I do get down and is valid. It's like, oh, I didn't play hard enough. I chickened out at this point. I did a cheap trick. That's absolute. But like for the content itself, I don't think you should ever feel that way, but I do. And it's like a struggle for me always to just, remind myself that.
Yeah. I like that. I think what you're saying is even if the audience rejects you, you don't have to reject yourself.
Yeah. And you shouldn't, but of course it happens. And I would say I've gotten better at it a little.
I think that's why performers have like a unique experience. It's like we are so used to it, you know. I mean, we're used to it. We're used to going through the motions of it. The feelings hurt every time. Like, mm-hmm. I think it hurts every time. But we're used to getting through it. Like, oh, this happened. It wasn't the way I wanted it to go. But am I still alive? Am I still okay? Yeah, I'm still here and breathing. Is my head going off and screaming at me? Yeah, that's also happening. Is this going to be the rest of my life, though? No. I know I'm going to get over this. I know there will be many other times that I go through this. It's just like we have kind of resigned to that or surrendered to that process, you know? And it's like, but there is also that other possibility. Like they might love you, you know? And usually they do. Like a clown, a comedian, an actor, crowds love them, right?
Yeah. Like,
and when you feel that love, it's like, oh, nothing. Nothing can.
It's the best thing, and I think, like you're saying too, like the half of your students that were like appalled or like what the fuck, I think a couple of them, will self reflect where they'll be pushed, where they'll be pushed. I think just feeling uncomfortable is pushing yourself. You know, that was a big thing with like so many videos during protests and lockdown. Like you can't, I have so much, it's so hard to respect people when they haven't experienced or seen the thing that they're talking about. Mm. And like you, because conceptually it's fucked up, but if you're going to be, you know, I'm going to, be a you're going to speak for a community and you haven't even seen this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't trust you. And, right. And you're just not pushing yourself to really feel. And it's like very surface. So I think like which is good too anyway, but you have to feel these things and you have to be uncomfortable. And just being uncomfortable is good because you could. I'm not going to look at politics at all. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't get you anywhere. It doesn't get, you're just stagnant. You're just mid. Mm-hmm. And it's such a sad life. Such a sad life. Mm-hmm. So I think, you take Grace's class, you see some fucked up shit, you're uncomfortable. That's a win. That's a win for you as a teacher, I feel. And you hope one of them reworks it.
Yeah. And a couple of them do. It's like when there's such a strong reaction happening in the room, I mean, they're clowning too. They're absorbing all the attention with their loud ass rejection, their loud ass intolerance, you know. It's like, they're taking up all the attention now. And then I would say to them, I would be like, all of it's valid. Now the challenge for you is how do you get to the center point rather than these polarities? Where do you get to this? How do you get to the center point? Because the center point is where you really see, where you acknowledge the full humanity of everything. For somebody to be like, for instance, the film was about a very misogynistic protagonist, like he's a womanizer and he's an asshole and he's self-centered. Obviously not a likable person, right? And so half the room, they were just like flipping out about how he's terrible and he's a sexist and he's a pig and narcissistic and la 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 la. I'm like, why are you naming all the obvious?
Yeah.
This individual proclaims to be those things. He is those things. He embodies them, and he is still the main character of the film. Our position as the audience, as we're viewing him, is to find the humanity in him. And the way I see it is, being all of those things is so human. Like, if we just sit there and judge him for all of his negative qualities and reject him and pretend like he is not part of our world or our society, that is like a bigger mistake, I feel like. How do you fully see this individual for all of his flaws and still be like, he is still me and I am still him? How can you get to that point? And like, to me, that's the highest point, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like clowning has helped me in a vast array of different ways, in the way of like stretching, like making me malleable as a human being. Like you talking about this concept of getting, you know, ass raped by a dildo on stage, representing like, you know, the fall of democracy, the illusion of democracy right now, as, you know, somebody who comes from like, you know, BIPOC background, right? And you're representing like immigrants or people of color, whatever. And this is a clowning space, and you're going to show your asshole and you're going to do this. To me, that is so outrageously funny. It's so like radically out there and yet simple. It's very simple, actually. It's like he's saying he's getting ass fucked by America, which is a valid and very concrete concept. And this is a very simple delivery. And you're going to turn off the lights. Like, no, had I been there, I would have been screaming my head off. Because it's so funny and outrageous, you know? Like, people who are like, oh, we can't look at this. It's like, you're missing the point. This is happening to a lot of people in this country right now. This literal thing is happening to a lot of people in this country right now. We're in a very, very safe, privileged space, and you're saying we can't do this? Why? This is the same thing as turning off the news, turning off the TV, ain't it? You know? Or you're just walking out of the room when somebody is, like, having that intense conversation, yeah?
You're so fucking right. That makes me want to cry, because that's exactly how I would feel. You know, that's where you know, that's where you want to get everybody is to that point of, it's so simple. And it's like Oscar the Clown, you know, those people know me. Those people are privileged. Those people get to go home and not experience ass rape and not experience the, you know, bad shit, really bad shit.
Deportation, incarceration, you know, getting your lives threatened, essentially, your well-being threatened, essentially, you know, like, it affects us.
And you know, my family, they're all, my mom's an immigrant. My stepdad's here on like a green card. I have cousins that were deported in the past. I have so many cousins. I don't know if they've been affected by what's going on right now, but they're constant. You know, in the clown community, still, you think, oh, this is a safe zone. No, you know how many times with my hair, how many questions I still get in the clown community of these. They are more progressive, but still you see it, like weird questions about my hair, weird questions about, hey, are you black? You know, what's your back? Like, it's still with this community. Me just wearing makeup is like, oh, you must be performing because you're wearing makeup. It's like your freedom of expression is always question, and it's, you know, and so I'm represent, it was, you know, my white friend, I don't know if it, you know, my white friend, it would be different if my white friend was getting ass raped, you know, but it's, I think it's more impactful that it's me, a son of immigrants, a person that also has been incarcerated and has been fucked with by the law and has been fucked with racism.
Yeah.
I'm the one getting, I'm okay with this. It's okay, guys.
Yeah.
And like, where is the, where is your knowledge about theater? It's like, this is not real. Nobody's getting raped. Of course I would get up if I felt uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. This is a performance. It was planned. It was discussed beforehand. And what you're saying about freedom of speech, and it's like your truth, right? Like, this is your truth. You're delivering your truth. And they're like, oh, wait, no, we can't. And it's like, why can't my truth be at the table too? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, or how come when I do this, it doesn't count? Like, why does it have to be a different individual with different demographics or identifications? You know, like, what's going on here? Why do you have a model? Why do you have a model for how performance should be? Yeah. Right there, we see a big red flag when it comes to like clowning, theater, art. It's like, you have a model for how something should be. And you were there trying to be like, hey man, get rid of your models. Like, this is my truth. And I'm coming in very authentically and originally. And if they're like, no, then... So then to me, the rejection is like, they're rejecting themselves, you know, they're rejecting that opportunity to expand their conscious awareness. And you were there kind of as a teacher. In that moment, you were a teacher. You weren't intending to be a teacher, but the moment they turned off the lights, you became the teacher, you know. Because you were there embodying a certain truth that they were like, I can't deal.
Yeah. It was, and that's why, you know, I felt all the feelings.
Obviously. Yeah.
I walked out of that stage. I felt bad because I didn't even like, you know, high five my group.
Yeah.
I felt bad. But I just, you know, you're feeling your feelings. You're mad. You're upset.
Right.
You're like, what the unfair. Fuck? It feels unfair.
Yeah.
How dare they? How dare they? And you know, it's like you're saying, it's so simple.
Right.
Ass rape by America. And like, you know, it's us at the park rehearsing, coming up with this. There's kids walking around and we're like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we raped each other? It's just, you know, there's no like, deep thought. We're just like, oh, dick in my ass and Oscar being like uncomfortable. That's funny. And I'm like, yeah. Let's make sure you use a lot of lube. Make sure you look at the audience while you're doing it.
Like, and know, were they're... you? Oh, wait, no, your ass was turned to face the audience.
Yeah.
It would have been funny if like, if there was a mirror and then you were looking at the audience.
Yeah.
The mirror's reflection, like, because your eye contact would have been way more impactful in a way. So you got to show both, or have the mirror reflect your ass and you just face the audience and look at all of them. Yeah.
And you know, it was dead. We got some laughs and a lot of commotion, but
yeah,
the piece was done.
Uh-huh.
I get up.
Yeah.
And you know, I look at the audience and it's like, I could feel like, okay, there's a, we're latched on now. And that I got a lot of laughs. I got a lot of love because also I was like, yes, I am proud of what just happened. I put on, we had an American flag that I you know, they were, we set it on the floor and that's what I laid on as the tarp.
Sure.
For the lube. And
yeah,
I was proud. I was like, yeah, it's me. I, of course I agreed to this.
Yes. Yeah.
And just walked out of there, you know, with my head up. But yeah, you're right. I think looking at the audience would have helped me, you know, and that's the other thing. Like, how do you make this point as a performer, like, how do you make it even better? You know, looking at the audience would have been better. You know, maybe toning down the rape stuff. But yeah, like, this is supposed to be a safe space. Like, come on. Like, I didn't do anything.
Yeah. And whose safety are we talking about? Are we talking about the safety of the audience's feelings? Or are we talking about the safety and the security of the artist to really feel safe enough to be totally true, totally authentic, totally original, very radical, right? Because, I mean, we're kind of going back to early on in the conversation when you were like, I feel like I'm spoiled. Like, I want more, mm-hmm. you know, more art, like something bigger, something more intense, you know? And it's like, you were having that moment. This was a radical moment, you know? And honestly, I don't feel like it's even that original because, like, yeah. I mean, there are so many artists, especially in the 60s and 70s and 80s, like, they were doing way more insane, like, trippy kinds of shit, way more intense stuff. And it's like, that was kosher. I mean, why not this in Los Angeles in 2025 after we have seen all of that postmodern stuff? Like, why not?
I think it's a good, like you're saying, a reflection of your human self and your insecurities and your lines. Yeah. And there's the external impression. You know, and I focus on the clown community because that's the only community I know.
Yeah.
But there's an impression of we're art warriors.
Yeah.
Until we're not art warriors. And I feel like an art warrior is somebody who everything is valid. I'm willing to watch everything.
Yeah.
And then feel your feelings.
Yeah.
When it's a community who's trying to be like, no, you can't do this.
Yeah.
No, we're going to turn the lights off on you.
Yeah.
These are the rules.
Right.
Red flags.
Yeah.
Red flags. As an artist, as somebody who's all about, you know, the First Amendment.
Yeah.
I think too, these moments can only push you up, just like the audience feels uncomfortable mm-hmm. as a performer. You have to feel that and like think about those red flags to get out of your, you know, maybe leave that community, go to another fucking you know, more a different space, try a different mm-hmm. space, try different things, try mm-hmm. So it's I could despair and grief and be pissed, but mm-hmm. immediately, because I'm trying to be better, I was like, Oscar, don't be angry,
right?
Just propel yourself forward, be smarter,
mm-hmm.
And find, you know, reframe your community that you love, reframe mm-hmm. what you love, reframe the community, reframe the people that you're performing to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good. I feel like this is what the community needs too. Like, you need pieces like this too.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, the line keeps getting big, lot, you know, higher and higher and higher. Like,
mm-hmm. I like that point. What's for you? Like, what's the end goal, or not even the end goal? Maybe that's like very anti-clown. What is it like? Is there something you want to make, or is there a project that you want to complete, or a film or a video? Like, what is it for you that for you is like, oh, I would love to do that with my performance art?
Mm-hmm. I love the idea, you know, it's very beautiful, romantic that as a performer, you know, that you're always on stage. You're always on stage. And clown is a good one because it's so human and you have to tap into your humanity and manipulate that for others. And I think I can always be doing that. So the idea of Oscar always not being Oscar exactly is very stimulating. So one big project that I really want to do right now is I want to clown for 24 hours straight. And I just want to, you know, the moment.
Live stream it or?
I want to live stream because I do want people to access it. At all times. I haven't figured out that part. But like everything is play. For me, you know, from the moment I walk outside my door, the play has started for 24 hours.
Yeah.
So to live in that, what I want is to get lost. You know, Jet talks about how sometimes clowns lose who they are and they feel like they're going crazy on stage. Like they've literally gone crazy because they're so in the emotion, so committed. I want to go insane. I want to feel what that feels like. And I even asked my friend Julia, hey, do you think 24 hours is just chickening out or 24 hours is not enough? And people are going to be like, hey, he only did 24 hours. That's nothing. And so I'm like, do you think I should do 48 hours?
Already.
No sleep.
Already. You're like, 24 hours isn't good enough. 48. It wasn't even 36. You're like 48. Yeah.
And that's my crazy, you know, maybe part of the rejection again. It's like, I don't want to get rejected. I don't want to be mislabeled. I don't know, you know, but yeah, that's my goal.
I love that. It reminds me, it's also because this already happened. There's like what you're trying to do, this 24-hour clowning live stream thing. It already has a politicized edge because there was that senator who was like talking for like, I don't know how many hours, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yes. They went on forever. Just like, they used all their time.
All their
time. And that's pretty amazing. That's amazing.
It is.
And that's even more fucked up. That's more fucked up than anything I can ever do. That is people in charge of our country doing this shit, you know. And that's why it's like so much of this. Our state is like, it's like surreal, but it's real. It's like real. It's not even performance.
No.
It's real.
These are the people who are running our country. These politicians are the most successful clowns. Like, somebody said this to me after I gave a job talk in Minneapolis. She was like, oh my God, Grace, I just realized Trump is a clown. I was like, he is like clown senior. Like, he has like the crown jewel of clown. That's exactly why he's president. Because he's so great at clowning, do you not see? And it's like the whole thing, politics, the whole thing is a drama. It's a massive, chaotic drama. And those guys, whenever the camera's on, the microphone's there, they know how to turn their clown on to manipulate not only the audience, but also the media and the world, you know. And it's like, I think by going through the motions of clowning, for me, after I started doing more clowning, I was like, I really can't tolerate the news because the affected part is so apparent now. It's like, this is so fake. I could see blatantly how fake this whole thing is. And it's just, I can't deal, you know. But yeah, I love this live stream concept idea that you have, the 24 hours. You know, you could always do 24 hours and then next time make it 48. And then next time make it 72. And then next time make it, right? Like keep going. You could just...
No, absolutely. That's funny because we thought about that too for our dildo thing. Because our previous performance, they tortured me, they shaved my head, nipple clamped me, beat me. But a note we got was like, you went from that, great, and they loved it, but we skipped too many steps to dildo rape.
Mm.
And you know, that's as how do you, you know, also you have to bend a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we can't just
right
explode
right,
you know,
right
all the time,
right?
But that's just, I don't know, that's just semantics. But
maybe,
you know,
maybe it's also about, like, I remember, I think Natasha said this in our clown class. She was like, you gotta give the crowd a win, you gotta let them win once in a while. And I think it's like, that to me is honoring a certain cycle. Like in life, we don't always get exactly what we want, but we get alternatives. In life, we get shitty things and we also get wonderful things. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's always a cycle, like a balancing cycle in life. So maybe with clowning, when we're doing it, it's like honoring that cycle. It's like, okay, we're all human beings here. We all have certain, you know, rhythms and patterns and cycles. And it's like, how do we sync up with that, you know? And maybe that's what it is, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Start off with a bagel and a zucchini. It's like, oh, they'll get the idea. Like, this is a precursor to what will happen. Or start out with, like, you know, in Pulp Fiction, when almost the last scene, like Bruce Willis gets that thing in his mouth and they tie him up with like the BDSM stuff. It's like, introduce these objects like slowly, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a good note. Like, don't go from 0 to 60 expecting them to be on board, because that's just not how human beings are wired. It's like, we're wired for gradual. And that's kind of like turning on the heat on a boiling pot of water with a frog in it, right? It's like, start out with cold water. They won't know. Like, maybe by the end, the ass rape, they'll be like, yeah, this makes sense. Of course, like, we were on this trajectory for like 30 minutes now. Of course, this is the end part, right? Makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
That's a great note.
And you can't do that in 5 minutes. We're like, we got to get to the ass raping after 2 minutes because we want to milk that. You know,
Who gave you that note?
The
note about, like, you skip too many steps.
Oh, you know, I don't know if you ever met him, Alex Golshani.
I don't know.
Tall guy, curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
He takes a lot of pictures. Beautiful, beautiful pictures. Mm. He's like a gem, because he takes pictures for all the clowns and just like really great pictures.
Love that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was right. You know, and it's like, the people that know, those are the notes they're giving you. Like, how to make it better. How to
make it work. Yeah.
How to make it really, really work.
How to make it work. That's such a good point. I love what you're saying. Because when people say like, oh, I have feedback. And the feedback is just to prove that what you did is wrong. That's not feedback. That's... No. Complete and unnecessary nonsense. But if the feedback has a love or care or intention to preserve what you already have and make it better, as you say, or make it work, then that is really valuable, like, beloved feedback, you know? And, like, this is something that I've been dealing with, like, in academia, because, like, they don't get it. A lot of academics who are overeducated don't understand the difference between feedback that is helpful, that actually will help make it work, versus a complete and utter rejection. And a lot of them, 99.9 of them, only want to reject. They're like, I don't get this. I'm smart. This isn't working. It's bullshit. Throw it out. And it's like, that's not how it works. Look at what's there and really try to see it for what it is. Like, fall in love with it, fully honor it, recognize it, acknowledge it, and then give them a chance to make it work. Like, that is feedback, right? Like, that's so, yeah, I love this Alex dude for giving you like that note, because it's such a great note, and it's a small note, but so wise. And like, I love the way that, like, you took all of this experience, like, in stride. And I love the concept. I still love it. Like, don't give up on it. That's my, that's what I have to say about it. Don't give up on it. You know, whatever ideation it becomes from this point onward, it's still, to me, a good idea. But yeah, so, okay, I do this on my podcast with all of my guests. We play this little improv game. Doesn't have to be long, you know? So I just basically ask you, what would you do if you were this character in this situation? And and that's it. You just riff with it, you know? It doesn't, like, don't have to overthink it. Just trust you. Trust yourself, because I trust you, you know? You're Oscar. You're an amazing clown. Okay. So the show that this is based off is called When the Stars Gossip, which is a TVN drama that came out earlier this year. And so let's say you're a gynecologist, a male gynecologist named Ryong, and you're a doctor, but you were raised by three single women in a very impoverished circumstance. All right. You were an orphan, and these three women raised you, like three moms, basically. And you're a doctor now, but you have a lot of student loan debt because you went to medical school, like, as a very poor person. All right. So you're working all the time, but you're barely getting by. One day, a woman named Ko-eun rear ends your car. Right. And you get out and you look at her and you recognize she is the daughter of a massive conglomerate owner called MZ Group. And she fucked up the back of your car. What do you do?
I would be like, hey, my three moms are going to come after you. They're going to open you up. And they're going to show you something if you don't give me my insurance, your insurance. I was an orphan. And this is not okay. This is not okay. This car was given to me by the orphan establishment who inseminated randomly my three. Oh yeah, no way. They're not my mom. They're not my mom. They're not my real mom. They inseminated my real mom. The CEO killed my real mom, and this is my story. And now my trunk is, I can't even open my trunk and get to my tools. This is not good. I need your insurance. Insurance cards.
This is a perfect answer. All right. Question number two. Question number two.
That was elaborate.
Yeah, that was very specific and in detail. Yeah. No, let's keep going. You're doing great. All right. Let's say you're the same guy. You're Ryong, the gynecologist, all right? This woman, Ko-eun, who rear-ended your car, who was filthy rich, she falls in love with you, all right? She thinks you're a hot stud, all right? You guys hook up. She's like, this is good enough. She says, I love you. She says, let's get married, okay? But you don't love her. All right. She's hot and all, and she's rich, but like, you don't love her. And her very, very wealthy father, Jaeryung, disapproves of you because you are from a very poor, impoverished background. What do you do?
I want to take your dad out to dinner. I just got a gift card to CBK. And, you know, I will pick him up early. I will take my car. I will clean it. I will clean my car for you. And then, you know, Daddy, would you like the barbecue chicken pizza or the white pizza? And then I'd get down on my knee and propose. I propose. Oh, and they don't like me because I'm impoverished. I'd be like, nuh-uh. I have what counts, Daddy. I have what counts. And then, you know, I talked to him about the construction of pizzas and my love for pizza. And talked to him, you know, there's this Italian pizza in Naples where you put gold on it. And, you know, it's like $10,000 a slice. And I would pitch that to him as my own idea. Oscar's Funky Pizza Shop. And hopefully that would win him over, you know. Forget the impoverished. Mm-hmm. You know, we can both be daddies to your mm-hmm. daughter. Mm-hmm. And have a joint bank account.
Problem solved. All right, this is great. All right, question number three. Let's say you're the same guy. You're still young, okay? You find out that your girlfriend's older sister, Minjung, and her husband had a really hard time conceiving a child because the husband's sperm is misshapen. One day, due to an accident, Minjung's husband dies, okay? Now, Minjung and Ko Eun's father, Jaeryung, the man who disapproves of you, he is like obsessed for one of his daughters to become successfully pregnant in order to produce an heir that will carry on this conglomerate lineage. Okay. He wants to keep the wealth in the family. Mm-hmm. So Minjung, your girlfriend's older sister, who is also a doctor, by the way, she does some research and she finds out that if an in vitro insemination occurs out in space where there is zero gravity, then her dead husband's misshapen sperm will straighten out because of zero gravity. So this rich dad, Jaeryung, tells you, the gynecologist, tells you to go up in space as a tourist and complete this insemination for him on the down low, which is totally illegal. And he says, if you successfully bring back this fetus for my daughter, then I will approve of your marriage to my younger daughter, Kuen. What do you do?
I would go to the upcoming production of Spaceballs 2. I would ask for money to, you know, to just for the gas money to go to the rocket ship. And I would make them make a set, where it looks like a real rocket ship,
right?
But that's just a misdirection.
Yeah,
the real rocket ship is right next to it. I would make sure I'd have a body double so they could work on Spaceballs 2. So I could have time to sneak in, you know, the sister.
Okay.
I'd be like, hey, Elon Musk, hey, Daddy, can you, you know, because he has ties to Elon.
Right.
Pay for our fuel to get up there. I would go up there, zero gravity. I'd be like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. I'd take my, I'd be like, this is what real shape sperm looks like. Oh, you know, we'd, I'd make them feel comfortable. We'd play, we'd, you know, we'd have a session of meditation and maybe some games. I don't know, the charcuterie board. And then, you know, we'd get it on. Meanwhile, we're streaming Spaceballs too, because I need to be checking, because I'm, you know, I got to make sure the actor is playing me right.
Yeah.
So I'd have a thing while I'm, you know, with septum and I'd make her feel good and make her feel, you know, like this is my room. This is my hospital. This is my work. And we're going to go down back to Earth.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have a beautiful life.
Oh.
And we're going to be one happy family. And we're all going to watch Spaceballs 2 together.
Mm-hmm.
And your kid is going to grow up to be beautiful.
Wow.
And misshapen. Not misshapen. Not misshapen. No, we don't like
not
that
misshapen.
Sperm.
Right, right. We didn't use
no
that
misshapen
one.
Sperm.
Okay. All right. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. All right. Question 4. Let's say you're the same guy. All right. You agree to the terms that the chairman has presented, and you blast off into space. All right. But when you get there, the commanding officer of that spaceship, her name is Eve, and she is hot. But she hates you. She thinks you're a nuisance. You're like extra baggage. And she bosses you around, calls you a tourist the whole time, and mistreats you, disrespects you like a child. What do you do?
Ode to Eve. Eve, you are beautiful like the coldest night on a winter's day. Eve, ode to Eve, you are as cruel as one can be. Eve, please, oh please, Eve, be one with me. Set sail, Eve, set sail. Through the night, we shall come. We shall come together, Eve. Please stop being a cunt to me, Eve. I love, I feel, I hurt. My pain is real. Eve, oh Eve, stop, please. Be one with me. Be with me forever, Eve. Green sleeves. Forever we shall be together in harmony. Eve. Ode to Eve.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
All right. All right. All right. Next question. Let's say you're the same guy. All right. There is a mishap on the spaceship. You and Eve both get abandoned by the ship. You're both stuck in the space atmosphere. All right. In order to survive, you guys are in a single compartment that's about the size of a sleeping bag. There's limited oxygen. It's very, very cold. And Eve recommends that you both get naked in order to hold on to each other so that you could, like, use your body warmth in order to get through it. And so now you're both, like, butt naked in the same sleeping bag compartment, and you're clutching onto each other. What do you do?
Eve, you're so clammy. We need to shift. My penis is mashed up against your weird clammy parts. Is this our life forever? Your clammy fucking back? How many vertebrae do you have? It feels like you have 30. Oh, it's so clammy. How are we going to pee? How are we going to pee? Oh, man, Eve. What are we going to do? We're stuck. And it's so clammy. Why is it so clammy in space? And then, you know, Eve, let's kiss. Let's kiss. Let's kiss. Let's make it. Let's go all out, Eve. Let's get lost. Let's talk about this. Is this going to work? Can this really work between us? I need space. I thought I would have a lawn, but no, I just have clammy bone structure.
Okay. Amazing. All right. We're almost there. You're doing great.
This is fun. I like this.
So let's say you're Eve now. All right. Now you gotta get in the mindset of Eve. Okay. You find out that Byung, the man you went to space with, the tourist guy, he conducted an illegal in vitro insemination up in space using human sperm and human eggs. This realization now puts your entire career at risk. What do you do?
This guy touched me. This guy touched me. I'm getting my lawyers. He touched me. He just touched me. I was in the bathroom. I was in the bathroom. I was washing my hands. And then he came in. He pulled down my pants.
Whoa.
And touched me.
Whoa.
Yes. And this is not okay. This is not okay. I'm contacting my lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel my rights were violated. This is not okay. I'm calling my congressman. And I'm calling my dad. And my dad's going to give it to you for touching me. And you're over. You're done. You're weird sperm. No more. And you touched me, and you touched me hard. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it. Now, who am I in space? I'm nobody in space, just a touched woman. Just a touched woman, and this is not cool. And I feel less, and you know, I just wanted space balls too. I just wanted CPK, and now I'm in space.
Okay.
That's okay.
All right, so that's your response. Okay. Frame him, basically. Response. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. You're doing yes. You're doing great.
You got right. it. You got it.
Second to last question. All right. Let's say you're Eve, okay?
Okay.
You need to return to space for another mission, okay? But when you get up there, you realize, "Oh my God, you're pregnant." Because you and that guy, you guys did have sex in that sleeping bag, okay? You're pregnant. But if you were to travel back down to Earth, the force of the speed that is required on that spaceship, it will kill your fetus. Like, your baby will not survive that trip. But if you stay in space, you're risking your whole health and possibly even facing death. What do you do?
What would be more romantic than to fly into the sun? Let's take out this baby. Let's take out me. Come with me to the sun. And let's burn. Because it can't be just the baby. It can't just be me.
Mm.
If it's not all of us, then nothing.
Mm.
So let's burn beautifully. Are you with me?
Beautiful. All right. Gorgeous answer. Final question. All right. You're Ryung. You're that gynecologist dude again, okay?
Okay.
You're mad at Eve. You're a little mad at Eve because she broke up with you as soon as you guys landed back on Earth. And she destroyed that successful in vitro insemination that you made up there in space, all right? But then you find out that Eve is now in space and currently pregnant with your child. And she is unwilling to leave. She wants to stay up there and have the baby, despite everybody telling her it will put her in harm's way. And she wants to stay up there and give birth to your baby. What do you do?
I'd get on AIM. I'd chat. I'd be like, listen, through this is all through chat. this is all through chat. Eve. Dear Eve. I've met somebody new. And, you know, they're going to have an earth baby. I guess you don't want to have earth babies anymore. What's not a thing anymore, Eve? I got to bounce. I hope you have a good time up in space. And please don't come back, because I will have my earth baby down here. You have your space baby up there. And yeah. I think our lives are better separate. And signing off. Your forever doctor.
Great answer. Oscar, thank you so much for this amazing chat and for being such an amazing guest.
Of course. Thank you so much, Grace. This was so fun. And so great to get these ideas out and just like so relatable to what my life has been, with the things that I've been dealing with as an artist, as a human, in my this last year. So this Absolutely. Was so fucking fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks.